with Marco on Astro Talk on CITR 101.9 FM.
Welcome. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9. I'm looking at NASA's website, one of my favorite websites, and there's all kinds of wonderful things, the Webb Telescope, exoplanets. It says new clues to TRAPPIST-1 planet compositions, their atmospheres. So that isn't that interesting? They can, who's they? These astronomers can now determine what the atmospheres or the planets, these exoplanets. So EXO, planet that is outside of our solar system, many, many light years away. So they can determine their atmospheres and the planet compositions and things like that. So that's pretty interesting. I've been thinking a lot about, I don't know why I'm thinking about it, but there was a physicist, I think it was 50s or 60s, I don't remember his name. He was ridiculed when he made a theory. Everybody knows what diffraction is, don't they? Well, if I sit outside this room or behind a wall, if I throw a piece of paper at the wall, it doesn't go through the wall, does it? But if I talk, someone on the other side of the wall can usually hear me because the sound waves diffract. So they bend around the door and any openings and they can be heard. So something that is a wave can diffract. It can bend around. So I believe this famous physicist, I'll try to get his name for you. It was a show I was watching. They were talking about an electron going through two holes. And he came up with a proposition or a theory or proclamation that the electron went through both holes because I think this is what happened. The universe split in two. Everybody ridiculed him and say, ah, ha, ha. How can you say something like that? So many famous people, whoever they were, and whenever their time was, they may have been ridiculed when they come up with their theories, and later they were accepted. So many scientists are now believing universes can split in two, or there's infinite universes, and all kind of weird things happen. So there was a pattern. When this electron went through this double slit, two holes, there was a screen, I don't know how far it was, maybe a meter, maybe half a meter away, there was a diffraction pattern on the screen. So this physicist said, or this astronomer said, well, maybe the electron went through both holes and diffracted because the universe split in two. So people said, ha, 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 he's funny. But now many people are believing him. So I've been thinking about that, how universes can split in two. Is there multiple universes? Is there a universe or are there an infinite number of universes where in another universe right now, someone is doing the same thing exactly what I'm doing. He's the exact same person. Mathematically, I think scientists can say, well, that is a possibility. But something that can be proven mathematically, does that mean it's real? Does it really happen? So, for example, we can go towards our center black hole in our solar system, Sagittarius A star. It's 26,000 light years away. So if we were to go there, hover above its event horizon for a few years, come back to Earth, and the math says, well, Earth would have aged thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions of years. So just because we can prove it mathematically, does it actually happen or can it happen? So that's one thing about math. You can say, okay, I can prove this mathematically, but is it a reality? So I'm thinking about this multiple universes. Are there multiple universes? There's so many wonderful minds at our university, professors, esteemed, acknowledged professors that are thinking about these things right now. And I think about them, but I don't know. It's so hard to comprehend. But many professors are now saying, or scientists are saying, they're coming to accept it more and more. So Are there multiple universes? Is there another person just like you in another one of these universes doing exactly what you're doing? Well, mathematically, maybe we can prove that, yes, it's a possibility, but is it happening? Is there more than one universe, or is there multiple universes? We don't know. So, a multiverse. Is there a multiverse? Is there a infinite number of universes? Is there an infinite amount of space? Kind of weird. What is space? How far does space go? How far does our universe go? These cosmologists think about these things all the time. It's quite interesting. It got to bend your mind a bit, I guess. So it is really something to think about, but these people, they have theories behind them that say, yes, they have models, theorems, propositions, whatever, that they can prove. Okay, so look at this. Studying the Van Allen Belt 60 years after America's first space flight. So tick, tick, tick. The device, a Geiger counter strapped to a miniature tape recorder, was registering radiation level 1,000 times greater than anyone expected. As the instrument moved higher, more than 900 miles above the surface of the Earth, the count ceased. Scientists were baffled. It was early 1958. The United States had just launched its first spacecraft, and a new discipline of physics was about to be born. Well, they found the Van Allen belts, and sometimes they think, well, they test these things in the atmosphere to see if the Soviets are secretly detonating nuclear bombs. And they find something else, and they go, and they find, and they say, oh, the Soviets are detonating nuclear bombs. But it really is something else. So the Van Allen radiation belts were first discovered 60 years ago today. The United States launched its first satellite into space. So that's January 31st. So that's a couple days. So 60 years and about 5 days ago, dubbed Explorer 1, the spacecraft followed just months after the Soviet Union's Sputnik 1 and 2 spacecraft commenced the space age. Data captured the Geiger counter aboard Explorer 1. Data captured by the Geiger counter aboard Explorer 1 heralded the emergence of space physics and ushered in a new era of technology and communications. Far above Earth's atmosphere, the radiation picked up by the instrument aboard Explorer 1 wasn't of earthly origin. In fact, it was from a region scientists previously considered largely void of particles. Prior to launch, scientists expected to measure cosmic rays, high-energy particles primarily originating beyond the solar system, which they had previously studied with ground and balloon-based instrument. But what they found far outpaced the levels of radiation that would be expected from cosmic rays alone. So we have Van Allen belts. I think there are two of them. One is called the inner Van Allen belt. And guess what? That's closer to the Earth. The outer Van Allen belt, surprise, surprise, it is farther from the Earth. So what are Van Allen belts? They were, let's see. I don't want to make a fool of myself, which I do a lot. So I'm going to say, what is a Van Allen belt? Okay, this is saving me now. 60 years later, scientists are still working to understand the peculiar and puzzling nature of the Van Allen belts. Whew, that saved me. In 2012, NASA launched the twin Van Allen probes to study particle behavior in the dynamic region. Equipped with superior radiation-hardened technology, the Van Allen probes instruments go far beyond Explorer 1 Geiger counter to observe particles, waves, and field in the radiation belts. So the Van Allen belts are belts of radiation of particles, magnetic field, that circle that are around our Earth. Is it the magnetosphere? I don't think it is. So, says, I'm trying to see the name here, a scientist named Sibek, and quote, "We study the Van Allen radiation belts both for scientific reasons, to understand particle acceleration, which occurs through the universe, and practical reasons, because particles accelerated to high energies are a hazard to both astronauts and spacecraft. At Earth, we can study these details and apply that knowledge both to our journey to Mars and to better protect astronauts at the moon, end quote. Well, we don't have astronauts at the moon anymore, not for a long time. From the beginning, the Van Allen probe set a pace of rapid discovery. Within days of their launch, the probes found the void between the inner and outer belts, which was thought to be empty, was occupied by a third temporary belt. The third belt lasted just a month, but reappeared again later in the mission with major solar activity. So there's actually a temporary belt in the middle. Explorer 1's discovery 6 decades ago paved the way for new generations of spacecraft to explore the radiation belts. Today, with the help of other missions, like the time history of events and macroscale interactions during substorms, or THEMIS, THEMIS, let me read that again, time history of events and macroscale interactions during substorms, or THEMIS, and magnetospheric multiscale, or MMS, missions, NASA scientists are continually unveiling new secrets in our magnetic space neighborhood. Multi-point observations are essential to understanding the belt's dynamics, and in 2016, the Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency, or JAXA, J-A-X-A, launched the satellite ARASE, or RASE, to cooperate with the Van Allen Belt Probe's mission in studying the radiation belts. A new CubeSat mission, the Compact Radiation Belt Explorer, or CERES, C-E-R-E-S, or Compact Radiation Belt Explorer, or CERES, CERES, is scheduled to launch in April 2018 to work in conjunction with the Van Allen probes, studying the interactions between plasma, waves, and electrons in Earth's other atmosphere. So says this scientist again. Another scientist, Skurath Kanakai, and quote, "We don't know what other discoveries are hidden in the radiation belts. As technology improves, who knows what we'll be able to find," end quote. So a lot of planets, for example, Jupiter, Saturn, they have huge radiation belts or huge magnetospheres. And the radiation in space is, as they said here, save me. Scientists are still trying to learn what radiation is in space. And here it is. Here's the quote. 60 years later, scientists are still trying to work to understand the peculiar and puzzling nature of the Van Allen belts. So I'm going to go for a break, and when I come back, let's talk a little bit about Van Allen belts. Now, wouldn't that be fun? So there's lots of radiation in space, a lot of interesting things in space, and when we come back, we'll talk about it all. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.
This is going out to the whole wide west side. I'm saying, yeah, break it down for me. Steady mobbing, rock on. I was just a young boy living in the hub city, Eastside Compton. Back in the days when Ice Cube and Easy had every talking about, boy, you can't.
This is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9 on the west side at UBC. Too short, bumped in every super boat and told us all how to ride for the west coast. My people singing, let me where you at, throw your gloves in the air and wave them like you just don't care. From LA to the Bay, what you say? All day, every day, any damn day. Take a look around, we got the whole world locked down. No, 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 don't stop, won't stop. That's why I put it down for the west side. Ain't that long ago? Oh, no. We were still in 40s at the liquor store. Oh, no. Mama started tripping, so it's time to go. Mob to the park with the locusts. Everybody broke, smoking roaches. DJ Quick was the had every claiming he was from the CPT. Y'all remember? One time tried to clown. We had to burn this bitch on down. One time for my was in incarceration. Place a dime with you for having lots of patience. Sometimes for my sisters at the county build. I got some Westside love for all you ghetto children. 3 times for my dad that passed away. I took some jewelry for you.
and pray for better days. One day everything's gonna be fine. But until that day, my only reply.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion!
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
Welcome back. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR. Got to check out that Paperclip Club. Sounds quite interesting. Okay, so let's get back to some new stuff. Oh, actually, I did look up the Van Allen Belt. Surprising how much we rely on Wikipedia. And when they ask for a donation, I never give one. Shame on me, but I will next time. Okay, what's a Van Allen radiation belt? A Van Allen radiation belt, sorry, that was a tongue twister. A Van Allen radiation belt is a zone of energetic charged particles, most of which originate from the solar wind, that is captured by and held around the planet by the planet's magnetic field. The Earth has two such belts, and sometimes others may be temporarily created. The discovery. So it has two permanent belts and some temporary ones. The discovery of the belts is credited to James Van Allen, and as a result, the Earth's belts are known as the Van Allen belts. Earth's two main belts extend from an altitude of about 500 to 58,000 kilometers above the surface of the Earth, in which region or radiation levels vary. Most of the particles that form the belts are thought to come from the solar wind and other particles from cosmic rays. By trapping the solar wind, the magnetic field deflects those energetic particles and protects the Earth's atmosphere from destruction. The belts are located in the inner region of the Earth's magnetosphere. The belts trap energetic electrons and protons. Other nuclei, such as alpha particles, are less prevalent. Well, what's an alpha particle? Well, an alpha particle is a helium nucleus, just the nucleus, no electrons. So a helium nucleus has two neutrons, two protons, has atomic number, I don't know if it has atomic number four, but mass number four, okay. And it's supposed to have four electrons, but then if it is, the four electrons are stripped, it's called an alpha particle. So sometimes alpha particles are prevalent or are there in the Van Allen belts. The belts endanger satellites, which must have their sensitive components protected with adequate shielding if they spend significant time in the zone. In 2013, NASA reported that the Van Allen probes had discovered a transient third radiation belt, which was observed for 4 weeks until it was destroyed by a powerful interplanetary shockwave from the sun. So isn't that interesting, all these things that happen in astronomy? They're so cool. So the Van Allen belts encircle the Earth, and they protect us in a way. They're trapped radiation from the sun. So that's, I was going to say something like that, but I wanted to make sure I wasn't saying the wrong thing. Okay, so now let's go to another topic. I'm going to talk about Hubble, and it's cleverly, this is an article on www.nasa.gov, and the article is titled, Hubble weighs in on mass of 3 million billion suns. So this dated January 18th, 2018. It's on www.nasa.gov. Again, it says Hubble weighs in on mass of 3 million billion suns. In 2014, astronomer using the NASA and European Space Agency's Hubble Space Telescope found that this enormous galaxy cluster that we're talking about that has 3 million billion suns, or contains the mass of a staggering 3 million billion suns. So it's little wonder that has earned the nickname of El Gordo, the fat one, in Spanish, known officially as ACT-CLJ-0102-4915. It is the largest, hottest, and brightest X-ray galaxy cluster ever discovered in the distant universe. Galaxy clusters are the largest objects in the universe that are bound together by gravity. They form over billions of years as smaller groups of galaxies slowly come together. In 2012, observations from the European Space Observatory's Very Large Telescope, NASA's Chandra X-ray Observatory, and the Atacama Cosmology Telescope showed that El Gordo is actually composed of two galaxy clusters colliding at millions of kilometers per hour. So isn't that interesting? Two galaxy clusters are colliding at millions of kilometers per hour. Wow. The formation of galaxy clusters depends heavily on dark matter and dark energy. Studying such clusters can therefore help shed light on these elusive phenomena. In 2014, Hubble found that most of El Gordo's mass is concealed in the form of dark matter. So actually, the matter that we see, the matter that we're familiar with, that we know about, I think that comprises 5% of our universe. Isn't that amazing? So what we see, what we can feel, what we can touch, we know what it is. It is only 5% of the universe. The rest is, I think, mostly dark energy, about 70%, and dark matter is about 25%. So 70 plus 25 plus 5 is 100. So 5% of the universe is actual matter that we know what it is. The other 95%, we don't know what it is. So people don't know what it is. So let me get back to this. Evidence suggests that El Gordo's normal matter, largely composed of hot gas that is bright in the X-ray wavelength domain, is being torn from the dark matter in the collision. The hot gas is slowing down, while the dark matter is not. Wow, how do they know this? Interesting. It doesn't say how far this is. The image was taken by Hubble's Advanced Camera for Surveys and Wide Field Camera 3 as part of an observing program called RELICS. So Reionization Lensing Cluster Survey, or RELICS, R-E-L-I-C-S. Image 41 massive galaxy clusters with the aim of finding the brightest distant galaxies for the forthcoming James Webb telescope to study. So James Webb will study this thing, and hopefully it will learn more about ACT-CLJ-0102-4195. Now, isn't that great? I can say that, but I wouldn't even know what it meant or what it's supposed to be. So let's see what it is. Hubble captures, it's 7 billion light years away. So here's another article I'm reading. Hubble captures enormous galaxy cluster 7 billion light years away. A gorgeous photo by Hubble shows ACT-CLJ-0102-4195, the largest, hottest, an X-ray brightest galaxy cluster ever discovered in the distant universe. So ACT-CLJ-0102-4195 is located approximately 7.2 billion light years from Earth. This galaxy cluster is almost as massive as 3 million billion suns. So it's little wonder that it's earned the nickname of El Gordo. So the formation of galaxy clusters depends heavily on dark matter and dark energy. So when we study these, we can hopefully study or learn more about dark matter. The spectacular scene was captured. I said that already, so I'm going to move on. This is a new article I'm reading from Science News. The spectacular scene was captured by Hubble's Advanced Camera for Surveys, ACS, and Wide Field Cam 3, WFCS3, instrument as part of an extensive observing program called RELICS, Reionization Lensing Cluster Survey. RELX Image 41 galaxy clusters over the course of 390 Hubble orbits and 100 Spitzer Space Telescope observing hours, aiming to find the brightest distant galaxies. Studying these galaxies in more detail with both current telescopes and the future NASA James Webb Telescope will hopefully tell us more about our cosmic origins. So are we going to learn more about dark matter, about this stuff? Hopefully we will, so we can find out what 95% of the universe is composed of. So if you think of that, scientists have actually somehow been able to measure, I believe dark energy comprises 70% of the universe, dark matter about 25%, and normal matter 5%. So somehow scientists, even though they don't know what dark matter is or what dark energy is they say this galaxy cluster, which is actually two galaxy clusters in the process of colliding at more than a million miles an hour, or more than a million kilometers an hour. It says the normal matter is slowing down in the collision, but the dark matter is not. So they don't say how they know that, but it's very mind-boggling that something that weighs 300 million billion suns is colliding. The total mass of this thing is going to be, it's colliding somehow. Wow, that's quite amazing. So we're here on Earth, we just worry about simple things like what's for dinner. The bus is late. I'm going to be late. Stuff like that. Okay, so when I come back, I'm going to talk more about, of course, astronomy and maybe Hubble, maybe something else. So this is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9.
Are the following things technically possible? Life on other planets, is that theoretically possible?
Yes.
Okay, what about a Schwarzschild wormhole?
Yes.
Okay, what about this? Me going on a date with Charlize Theron?
No.
What, not at all? In no universe?
No.
In none of the infinite universes does that happen?
No.
It's completely beyond the bounds of scientific possibility is what you're saying?
Yes.
Quick follow-up question. In any of those potential universes, am I the one rejecting her and that's why it doesn't work out?
No. You do realize that typing your response is difficult for me, correct?
Okay, sure, yeah. It's just I'm trying to play this out because I'm just trying to see if there was any hypothetical hope.
No.
It doesn't matter. But never say never. Okay, if time travel were possible, would you want to go back in time and refuse to do this interview?
Yes.
You truly are an incredibly smart man. Stephen Hawking, thank you so much for your time.
From a Gucci in the winter, I seen you with your girl, sporting, in your chinchilla fur. I was laid up in the coupe back shader, looking at your face just pure with no makeup. A little bit of MAC lip gloss, hair in a bun, well done. Looking for a ring, I seen none, so I hopped out the coupe and hot the suit is stopping. Introduced like I'm shining, you my destiny, in your diamond cluster, too much just to touch you.
This is Robin, the program manager at CITR 101.9 FM. You're listening to AstroTalk with Marco, the best astronomy program on the planet.
Put it in your purse and call.
On the telephone, she heard my voice. Tell me to pick her up in my Rolls Royce. If my Rolls Royce is not for ladies, then girl, I'm gonna take you in my Mercedes. If my Mercedes would have full of a disease, then girl, I'm gonna take you in my Firebird. If my Firebird cannot pay the curve, girl, put your ass and the dumb at your butt.
You're getting closer. My player days is over. Well, maybe not completely, but still in all. Come here, let's see your head on my bed. And let me get between your legs. Lay on your back. Take it from the back.
Do you have any awareness of what's been happening with newspapers in the last 10 years?
Not at all. I mean, truth is, I don't even get them anymore. I just read the news on my phone. It's so much better, and it's free.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The future of news media is in your hands. If you're interested in independent journalism and current affairs, CITR's News Collective is for you. Help hound down stories about diverse and underrepresented issues in the Lower Mainland for Democracy Watch, airing every Thursday at 5 p.m. Email volunteer at citr.ca to get involved.
Welcome back. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR with Marco. So let's talk about a penguin and an egg. February 1st, 2018 on www.nasa.gov. The Spitzer Space Telescope imaged the penguin and egg. Okay. Looks like a galaxy, a couple of galaxies, quite a few galaxies in the picture. There's one that resembles a penguin. It does. And there's an egg below it, or another galaxy, a bright spot. And they're saying it looks like an egg, and it does. So this is the penguin and the egg, February 1st, 2018 on www.nasa.gov. This image of distant interacting galaxies, known collectively as ARP-142. Now, sometimes they have, like in our previous galaxy study, the one with 300 million billion suns. It was called ACT. So all these are capitalized. ACT-CJ. These are all capitalized. ACT-CLJ-0102-4195. It's composed of two galaxy clusters colliding at millions of miles an hour. So those are all capitalized. But now when we look at the penguin and the egg, it's called ARP-142. And for some reason, there's no dashes, and it's a capital A, small r, small p, 142. So is that a constellation, ARP? I should know this. But anyway, this image of distant interacting galaxies, collectively known as ARP-142, bears an uncanny resemblance to a penguin guarding an egg. Data from NASA's Spitzer and Hubble space telescopes have been combined to show these dramatic galaxies in light that spans the visible and infrared parts of the spectrum. This dramatic pairing shows two galaxies that couldn't look more different, as their mutual gravitational attraction slowly drags them closer. The penguin part of the pair, NGC 2336, was probably once a relatively normal-looking spiral galaxy, flattened like a pancake with smooth, symmetric spiral arms, rich with newly formed hot stars, seen in visible light from Hubble as bluish filaments. Its shape has now been twisted and distorted as it responds to the gravitational tugs of its neighbor. Strands of gas mixed with dust stand out as red filaments detected at longer wavelengths of infrared light seen by spectrum. So there is the smaller galaxy. The egg is kind of bluish white. The penguin is white with blue and red and pink, and it has a white spot where its eye is supposed to be. Very nice. So a nice looking little penguin, a big penguin. Somehow the little galaxy, it's much smaller than the penguin, it looks, but it's the little galaxy is having a good time distorting the penguin. So it seems that it's having more of a distorted effect on the penguin than the penguin is on the egg. Very strange. Okay. Eventually, these two galaxies will merge to form a single object with their two populations of star, gas, and dust intermingling. This kind of merger was likely a significant step in the history of most large galaxies we see around us in the nearby universe, including our own Milky Way. At a distance of about 23 million light years, these two galaxies are roughly 10 times further away than our nearest major galactic neighbor, the Andromeda Galaxy. The blue streak at the top of the image is an unrelated background galaxy that is further away than ARP-142. So there's the penguin and the egg, and there's a couple of other galaxies in the background above the penguin, quite a bit above the penguin. Combining light from across the visible and infrared spectrums helps astronomers piece together the complex story of the life cycles of galaxies. While this image required data from both the Spitzer and Hubble telescopes to cover this range of light, NASA's upcoming James Webb telescope will be able to see all these wavelengths of light and with dramatically better clarity. See, they keep talking about this NASA James Webb telescope. Well, NASA, let's get it off the ground. let's see what it can do, hopefully. And I think when they get it up there, they're going to have to do certain protocols, certain tests, and all this stuff, and set it up. And so it won't be, even though it gets into space, I don't know how long it'll take, but they have to get it up and going. So it'll take a couple more months, maybe 6 months, who knows. Anyway, so back to the article. The Hubble Space Telescope is a project of international cooperation between NASA and the European Space Agency. NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, manages the telescope. NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, one of my favorite places in the world, manages the Spitzer Space Telescope mission for NASA's Science Mission Directorate in Washington. So there's a nice little penguin and a nice egg, and they're having fun in our universe. Who says astronomy can't be fun? When a penguin and an egg, when the penguin sits there and it says, I'm going to guard you, egg. So we were just talking about the big galaxy cluster, and we talked about a penguin and egg. So let's talk about another thing. Hubble's Majestic Spiral in Pegasus. This is dated February 2nd, 2018, and it shows a beautiful galaxy like so many of Hubble's pictures are. That's one thing I read a little while ago. I may have mentioned this before on air. Hubble gave us the most beautiful pictures. The James Webb Telescope can do more advanced work on dark matter and stuff. Might not give us the beautiful pictures, but so scientists will be so happy with James Webb, and the public are saying, how come it can't match Hubble's pictures? Well, maybe it can't in terms of beauty, but it's going to be doing its science up there. So the NASA European Space Agency Space Telescope image shows a spiral galaxy known as NGC 7331. So NGC is Big N, Big G, Big C. First spotted by the prolific galaxy hunter William Herschel in 1784, NGC 7331 is located about 45 million light years away in the constellation of Pegasus, the winged horse. Facing us partially hidden on the galaxy showcases its beautiful arms, which swirl like a whirlpool around its bright central region. So you look at this. This is one galaxy, NGC 7331. It's 45 million light years away. Is there life on that galaxy? Well, there's always the Bible point of view where we're the only life in the universe. Maybe it is, but there's all these other. And now that they say there's a multiverse with so many galaxies in our own universe, and then there's a multiverse. Is there life? We got to think about that. Astronomers took this image using Hubble's Wide Field Cam, WFC3, as they were observing an extraordinary exploding star, a supernova, near the galaxy's central yellow core. Named Supernova 2014C, it rapidly evolved from a supernova containing very little hydrogen to one that is hydrogen-rich in just 1 year. This rarely observed metamorphosis was luminous at high energies and provides unique insight into the poorly understood final phases of massive stars. Well, they say poorly understood. I thought a lot was understood about the final stages of massive stars before they go supernova. I thought nuclear reactions proceed in the sun or in a star until when they fuse to make iron. That's when the supernova implodes, because iron requires an input of energy to fuse iron together. And in the process, in the steps leading up to the production of iron, for example, in the initial stages where four hydrogens are fused to make one helium, there's an energy output. Now, to fuse iron, you need an energy input. That's why the star dies. It just collapses. That's what I thought. And they said poorly understood. Well, I don't know if it's poorly understood, but anyway, it implodes, and then the matter that then whatever's left over in the center either forms a neutron star or a black hole. Depends on how much mass is left over in the sun, in the star, and the other stuff is expelled outward. So they were watching a supernova. I was wondering what's the size of this black hole that is in the center of NGC 7331. It doesn't say. But anyway, NGC 7331 is 45 million light years away in the constellation of Pegasus. And it's galaxy's central yellow core. There's a supernova that is now hydrogen-rich. In one year before, it had very little hydrogen, so scientists are puzzled why this happened. NGC 7331 is similar in size, shape, and mass to the Milky Way. It also has a comparable star formation rate, hosts a similar number of stars, has a central supermassive black hole, and comparable spiral arms. The primary difference between this galaxy and our own is that NGC 7331 is a unbarred spiral galaxy. It lacks a bar of stars, gas, and dust cutting through its nucleus, as we see in the Milky Way. Its central bulge also displays a quirky and unusual rotational pattern, spinning in the opposite direction to the galactic disk itself. Interesting stuff. All this stuff is going on. I'm just wondering why atoms just don't fall apart, don't fly apart. Why? What makes, if something falls, why does it always fall? What makes our sun, what makes our Earth always go around the Earth? Why doesn't the Earth just fly off? All this thing of physics, why do physics force things to behave the way it does? Well, we're lucky it does because we're here. So how come we're stuck to the Earth? Why don't we just float up in the air? All these interesting things about astronomy makes you think about that. By studying similar galaxies, we hold a scientific mirror up to our own, allowing us to build a better understanding of our galactic environment, which we cannot always observe, and of galactic behavior and evolution as a whole. So it seems that there's lots going on in the world of astronomy. And like they said, they don't know what drives it all. So here's another one about Hubble. So again, Hubble has dazzled us all for years, for so many years, with its brilliant pictures. And I guess a comment I heard a little while ago that Hubble is the most successful scientific mission or experiment or whatever it is in the history of our planet. And, you know, it's hard to argue against that, isn't it, with all the amazing knowledges. But think, Hubble can image something like a galaxy that's 45 million light years away, or hundreds or billions, or millions or hundreds of millions or billions of light years away, but it can't pick up enough of Pluto. It can't see Pluto very well. It can't give us much information on Pluto, which is so much closer. And I guess that's obvious that Pluto doesn't reflect the light that these objects give off. So a galaxy gives off a lot of light. Pluto doesn't give off much light. So now let's look at Hubble's cartwheel. This is dated January 19th, 2018, and it shows three prominent galaxies. It looks like galaxies. One is really big. This is the cartwheel. The other two are beside it, and maybe they're dwarf galaxies that are Hubble, that are orbiting this cartwheel, which might be a galaxy or might be a supernova explosion. So here it goes. This is an image of the cartwheel galaxy taken by the NASA European Space Agency Hubble Space Telescope. The object was first spotted on wide field images from the UK Schmidt Telescope and then studied in detail using the Anglo-Australian Telescope, lying about 500 million light years away in the constellation of Sculptor. And I'll give you that article again. It's called Hubble's Cartwheel. It's in www.nasa.gov. It's dated January 19th, 2008. Sorry, 2018. So lying about 500 million light years away in the constellation of Sculptor, the cartwheel shape of this galaxy is the result of a violent galactic collision. A smaller galaxy has passed right through a large disk galaxy and produced shock waves that swept up gas and dust, much like the ripples produced when a stone is dropped into a lake, and sparked regions of intense star formation appearing blue. So it's interesting what can spark star formation, because as our galaxy or our universe ages, less and less stars will be made until they say it's going to be the big chill or the big freeze or the dark, whatever it's going to be called. where there's no more stars to be made. Our universe will just whimper out. There'll be no more energy, no more stars, no more nuclear fusion, whenever that happens. I don't know if it will. But anyway, here we have a beautiful picture of a blue galaxy, and it's shaped like a car, shaped like a Ferris wheel, with some things in the middle. It's quite prominent. And it said here that another galaxy went right through a large disk galaxy. So a galaxy, how could it go right through? Didn't it collide? But anyway, it says here that a smaller galaxy has passed right through a large disk galaxy and produced shock waves that swept up gas and dust. So it looks like a Ferris wheel. And the blue tells us there's star formation going on in there. The colors can tell a lot of things. For example, when you look at a supernova explosion or look up in the sky and you see, well, these astronomers with their telescope, that's what I mean. When astronomers with a telescope looked up and they see with these very powerful telescope, and the colors reveal what kind of elements are there and what's cooking and what's not cooking. So this is blue. It looks like there's a lot of star formation. So a similar galaxy has passed right through a large disk galaxy and produced shock waves that swept up gas and dust, much like the ripples produced when a stone is dropped into a lake, and spark regions of intense star formation appearing blue. The outermost ring of the galaxy, which is 1.5 times the size of our Milky Way, marks the shock wave's leading edge. This object is one of the most dramatic examples of the small class of ring galaxies. This image is based on earlier Hubble data of the Cartwheel Galaxy that was reprocessed in 2010, bringing out more detail in the image than seen before. So we have a beautiful Cartwheel Galaxy. And again, Hubble is doing the science. And again, when we get our James Webb telescope, and then there's also going to be the WFIRST after that. I think it's going to be years and years in the making, but these will maybe not give us as beautiful pictures as Hubble has. So I want to look at this for a second. And it says new clues to TRAPPIST-1 planet composition and atmosphere. So this is TRAPPIST-1. It shows an artist's conception show TRAPPIST-1. So that's TRAPPIST-1 planetary system may look like, based on available data about the planet's diameters, masses, and distance. So it shows a picture of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 planets. And in the year since NASA announced the 7 Earth-sized planets of the TRAPPIST-1 system, scientists have been working hard to better understand these enticing worlds just 40 light years away. Thanks to data from a combination of space and ground-based telescopes, we know more about TRAPPIST-1 than any other planet system beside our solar system. A new study in the journal Astronomy and Astrophysics, using data from NASA's Spitzer and Kepler Space Telescopes, offers the best yet picture of what these planets are made of. They use the telescope observations to calculate the densities more precisely than ever, then use those numbers in complex simulations. Researchers determine that all of the planets are mostly made of rock. Additionally, some have up to 5% of their mass in water, which is 250 times more than the oceans and Earth. Well, thank you for listening. This has been Marco. You have been listening to AstroTalk today. Get ready for Leroy Ramirez. He's going to bring us with his Latino music. And I'm signing off. And next week, we'll see what I got for you. So thank you. You've been listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9. Hey, Cuba.